There's a fairly new erotic publication on the market, and unless you're a gay male, chances are you're probably not familiar with it. It's called Blue Boy. Blue Boy is, in a way, not unlike Playboy in the sense that it's a glossy, with feature articles on the arts, politics, and other issues, and a series of highly idealized erotic naked photos. In Blue Boy, the photos are of men. Our culture has always had sexy photos of women that are sold on the newsstands. We've discussed in the recent past the sensibilities of male-oriented female erotica. This afternoon on Fresh Air, we're going to discuss male erotica which features males. We'll also be discussing the viewpoints and politics of three different gay publications: Blue Boy, the Philadelphia Gay News, and New Gay Life, which is also a Philadelphia publication. I'm in the studio with three people now. Donald Embinder, who is the publisher of Blue Boy. That's a national publication with a present circulation of 165,000. My other guests are George Bodimer, who's the business manager of New Gay Life, which is a Philadelphia-based gay magazine in newsprint, and Jack Veazey, who's the managing editor of the Philadelphia Gay News, which is a gay newspaper. Welcome, all of you, to Fresh Air. I'd like to begin by asking you to describe in your own words, to describe your publication, what its content basically is, how often it's published, what its point of view is. Donald Embinder, can we start with you?
Surely. Blue Boy is primarily, and we're about 3 years old now, is primarily, from day one, has been an entertainment magazine. This has been our point of view, we were there to provide entertainment for our readers, specifically interested in what the gay lifestyle is about. The editorial package consists obviously of male nude centerfolds, fiction, investigative reporting, and a variety of articles that specifically pertain to matters of interest to gay men. It is, as you say, a glossy magazine. In fact, the very probably the single most important editorial viewpoint we held from the very beginning was that the gay man in this country probably as much or more so than any other group of men in the country was interested in good graphics, quality photographic reproduction, good illustrative art, and well-written editorial and fiction matter. And this is what we have strived very hard to accomplish.
Okay, that was Donald Embinder, who's the publisher of Blue Boy magazine. Jack Veazey of the Philadelphia Gay News is here. Jack, do you want to describe, in your words, the Gay News for us?
Okay, the Gay News is basically a newspaper, much like other newspapers. It contains news about what's going on locally and also what's going on throughout the country that's of interest to gay people. Events like the changing of a law, for instance, in a way that would favor gay rights, or a teacher being fired somewhere and his firing being upheld when appealed to a higher court, or anything that would be at all of interest, and some feminist news also, news that would be of interest to women. We also have an entertainment section, which is geared towards gay people. We interview performers who have gay followings and then ask them questions which are relevant to gay people, that would be of interest to gay people.
Do you see the Gay News as being primarily male-oriented?
Yes. Yes, it is not. We have women writers, and we're trying very hard to appeal more and more to women. But we are predominantly male-oriented, and we realize that, and we take that into account mainly when we decide what to put on the cover.
Okay. George Bodimer of New Gay Life.
Well, New Gay Life is primarily a community-oriented magazine for gay women and men, which covers a variety of issues, the people, the activities, the organizations of interest to the gay community, at least the gay community which we serve. By way of doing that, we have several regular features with information and entertainment. We do have a short news column, a calendar of happenings and events, our directory of gay and gay-related organizations, religious groups, social service agencies, the gay bars and clubs. We do reviews of films, theater, other entertainment activities. We are essentially a volunteer operation, though we do pay people pay them commissions on sales and advertising. Otherwise, since we are a nonprofit operation, we're unable to pay writers or photographers. Our staff is about evenly divided between women and men. But it's a situation that the titles aren't necessarily essential. Anyone who comes in as a writer will probably wind up doing some typing or layout or anything else like that. We try very much to encourage and even to solicit the involvement of the community as a whole in the day-to-day operation and the and even the article content of the publication. We do try because we feel we have a responsibility to reach not only gay men but gay women, and not only white men but black men as well in the gay community.
If I asked you if you felt that each of your respective periodicals had a political slant, what would you say, Donald Emminder? Is there a politics, a specific side of politics that Blue Boy represents?
No, not really. You know, I happen to have some rather strong political viewpoints in terms of the gay movement, but the magazine has not become heavily involved in politics. We are likely to become more involved simply because we're now reaching enough people on a national basis, enough men where I feel we really now are beginning to have a responsibility to speak out on national issues. The problems of a monthly magazine dealing with quick-changing political affairs are just that. We're working 2 or 3 months in advance, and by the time we get around to dealing with the political realities of a particular situation, it's old news. So I think the newspapers are far better shaped to handle something like that.
Let me maybe rephrase the question. The question. Rosa von Praunheim, who's a German gay filmmaker, was on the show. And it was his attitude that to be gay is to be political, that if one is gay, one is, like, by nature kind of obliged to take a certain political stance, specifically about gay rights, but therefore about other minority rights. Is that implicit? Is that involved at all in any of your publications?
I think it's nonsense, frankly. I think gay people are basically just like any other people outside of the privacy of their own bedrooms. I would say the overwhelming majority, the number of gay people involved in political activism within the gay community is a very, very small portion, a very small percentage, perhaps even smaller than the number of straight people who are involved in local PTA meetings and what have you. So I don't think it's true. I don't think gay people are necessarily political. The political viewpoint I have been dealing with specifically, and I think we're seeing it more heavily in the past few months with the kind of referendum defeats that the gay community has had, is that it's unrealistic to expect the majority in any metropolitan area to vote on the full civil rights for a minority within that community. It would, and unfortunately what it does is it tends to raise the expectations of the gay community, in particular metropolitan area, to unrealistic heights. There's very little or no chance of us ever winning a at-the-polls referendum victory. It just isn't in the cards. It's no more likely to happen than it would have been for the majority of the citizens of Selma, Alabama, 20 years ago, to vote full civil rights for the blacks in that community. Our battle is going to be a long one. It's going to have to be fought at the federal level. It's going to have to be dealt with on a continuing basis in every instance possible through judicial review and a long-term, hard-fought educational process in terms of lobbying and educational programs at the federal level. And this isn't going to happen quickly. It took 200 years for blacks to obtain their full civil rights.
Jack, what's your reaction? Is homosexuality, which is a sexual preference, implicitly carry with it a certain set of politics or a certain political awareness?
Not necessarily, I don't think, but I think that if you're being open about the fact that you're gay, then that in this society becomes a political act. It can't help but become a political act. Because, for example, by being open with your family, suddenly gay people are no longer something that they just read about in the headlines. Suddenly gay people are not just freaks who live out in San Francisco or whatever, because a lot of people think of gay people as them rather than us. And that's really where the problem comes in. I think that if more gay people were open, society would change because people would realize that people in their lives are gay.
Okay, well, you work on a newspaper, and yeah. The newspaper's constituency is gays, not straight people. What's your political stance within that, you know, in speaking to the gays who subscribe to your periodical, to your
okay,
newspaper?
Well, we editorialize. We're published every 2 weeks, and we editorialize frequently. For example, when the primary election happened recently, we endorsed candidates. We have a national edition and a local edition, and in the local edition we supported a slate running for the PAC board in Center City, which controls zoning and licensing in Center City, and the slate won. So we're trying to do that. We're trying to support candidates, find out their views, find out how they've acted in the past about gay people. And we also express views on issues, for example, Supreme Court decisions, and we provide a forum. We have an op-ed page, like any other newspaper, and we provide a forum for people to speak through that to people in the community about different issues, there are all kinds of practices within the community that we take stances on or that we give other people a chance to take stances on, like, for example, women being heavily carded in male bars or various things like that. So, yeah, we do definitely have a political stance.
George, you want to react to the same questions?
I don't think that just by the mere fact that someone is gay necessarily makes them political. I do, however, believe that the publication of any gay magazine or paper these days is a political statement, given the kinds of pressures that are being generated all across the country, and the kinds of problems that many gay publications have faced in Toronto with Body Politic, or the vandalism of Diana Press, so that there are pressures that can be brought and have been brought to bear on gay publications specifically. And I think the very visibility is going to create more problems in the future. I think any gay publication right now that isn't being very careful about how they run their office is being unwise, particularly with the last week's Supreme Court decision. There are undoubtedly police departments and district attorneys that will abuse this. And one of the directions they're likely to abuse this is towards publications that are put out by groups or individuals that they don't like. Now, New Gay Life does not have a particular political philosophy other than what is represented in editorials or in replies to editorials, that sort of stuff. Our politics, I suppose, are best expressed by the variety of material that we do cover. As I said, we do try to provide a forum for blacks and women so they can explain what it's like for them. There are differences in being a black gay male from being a white gay male, or from being a black gay female, for that matter. So that, as far as that goes politically, that sort of view would be expressed in the regular articles of the magazine.
Okay, I'd like to talk about eroticism, which is something that one would find in Blue Boy, but one doesn't really find in The Gay News or in Philadelphia Gay Life. I mean, neither of those two publications have erotic photographs in them, unless it's like an album jacket or a fairly erotic photo of someone who's being interviewed, but it's not going to be a nude spread. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Blue Boy, there's a good, usually 10, 15 pages of erotic naked males. I had compared in my introduction Blue Boy to Playboy in the sense that it's a glossy and that there's, you know, quality writing and eroticism featured within the same publication. Now, my reaction to Playboy over the recent years has been that it's a fairly sexist publication in the sense that it uses what is, you know, very idealized women and kind of keeps them within a very sex object kind of stance, very coy poses and everything. And I looked at Blue Boy, not having really before been exposed to gay male eroticism, and tried to get a sense of what I think about it, you know, what I think about the kinds of poses. And I found it interesting, for instance, that there are some poses that are really kind of coy in the sense that I am used to seeing females posing. Is there a certain, like, sensibility within the eroticism of your publication that you're aiming for?
Well, there's a particular point of view that I have, and that is, as you look through the pages of Blue Boy, and indeed for with the a new publication that we're bringing out for women only, which is Male Nudes for Women, our basic point of view is that It's our objective to present the centerfold in as ambivalent and unstructured a position as possible, to enable the reader to exercise whatever fantasy involvement they wish to have. Consequently, you'll never see two men together in Blue Boy, or rarely. You'll rarely see
that.
Them trying to accomplish a specific, involved in a specific sexual orientation or what have you. We present essentially the raw material and hope that the reader can get involved in whatever way they wish. That's why the very same, many of the same models and many of the same photographic attitudes are common to Blue Boy as for Women Only, because I think straight women and gay men, when presented with the right sort of male models, in terms of what our feeling the male model should look like, can exercise whatever fantasy involvements they wish.
Do you think there's a difference between the type of model or the type of pose, the type of photograph that a woman would like to see as compared to a gay man?
I don't think so necessarily. I don't think there's basically that much difference. I think what the basic difference is that I think our photography is a lot more relaxed. I have to talk about Playgirl to give you what I'm trying to get at. Basically, I've looked at Playgirl, and I always feel that they've always had a basic difficulty, even though they've built a magazine around it, in dealing with male nude photography. They almost seem to have to relate it to some particular masculine attribute to save themselves from being assumed to be a homosexual magazine. Well, we don't have those particular hang-ups, and consequently we can deal with it, I think, in a much more relaxed fashion, and that's why I think the photography comes off far better.
The couple of times I've seen Playgirl, there's usually been men doing things like canoeing or standing
exactly,
half-clothed
yeah,
or not-clothed
yeah, yes.
beside a tall tree.
Or waving a football pennant or something.
Yeah,
yeah, they seem to have to get that in, and we don't feel that necessity. And I think that just the very unstructured nature of how we shoot our models really enables a woman or a gay man to get equally involved in whatever fantasy they wish to.
What you said about the necessity of Playgirl having to kind of show men in masculine activities raises in my mind a question which I'd like to illustrate with a record now and then come back to the studio and discuss. I was driving home in my car one day, tuned on the radio, and picked up on the radio a song called I'm a Macho Man, and the lyrics are something like, I'm a macho man, I have the kind of body that's in demand, people love to touch my body because I'm a macho man. Well, I panicked in the car. I said, this is the feminist backlash, because to use the word macho now is to make a statement no one does not know at this point about the existence of feminism and the way feminists react to the word macho, so to use it is a conscious statement. And I saw it as being a statement against feminism. What I didn't know, what I later found out, was that song performed by the Village People is it's a song from a gay point of view. It's a gay male group that sings it, and the word macho is a word now being used in a gay setting, and I'm not quite sure what it means in that context. So I'd like to talk about that, but before we do, let's give a couple of minutes listening time to the song that I was referring to.
Be a monster.
Listening to part of a recording called Macho Man, which is performed by a group called The Village People. Now, as I mentioned, that's a gay group. I think that for myself, if that was a heterosexual group and the word macho was really being used in a heterosexual context, that I'd have a good right to be upset or to be angry, given that it's a gay group. I'm not even quite sure what they're trying to say, what the word means in that context, so maybe you can explain that to us.
Well, I think what we have to go back a little bit before just dealing with the gay publications and understand that the particular society we're living in is so geared towards the physical. Politicians package themselves. There's one running for Congress in New Jersey who's a sports type, whose commercials are just plain packaging and tells you nothing about him. It just tells you how cute he is. Television has sort of entered an era of bouncing bosom mentality, that is how they're going to sell their programs and hence sell advertising, so that if we are in a society where the physical has become so important, this is going to be reflected in its various arts, including publishing or any sort of literature, as you're talking about erotic literature or pornography. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the word pornography, and I don't think it should really be steered clear of, because I think it's a positive statement. There was a quote in a book by Brendan Gill where he said that he is in favor of pornography since it is a statement for life and against death. And I don't think people should be quite so afraid of dealing with sex in literature.
Okay, but macho is different than saying sexual. Macho means I've got big muscles, I'm tough. And in the song it says, you know, I jog, I'm going to the spa, I've got big muscles and a hot body.
Well, okay, macho. I think that the gay macho thing, which has become very popular now, is more than anything else a fashion. It's a way of presenting yourself so that you become a convenient fantasy object for people in bars or wherever. There's a certain kind of stance, there's a certain kind of haircut, there's a certain kind of trim of beard, there is the wearing of keys on belts. And I think it's more a thing that appeals to people sexually. And I think that people who it appeals to tend not to too often think about the political implications of it at all. I myself am kind of offended by it because I don't like affectations. They make me uncomfortable. I feel that it's difficult to really get to know people who are so into presenting an image and trying to be a fantasy object or trying to be something that follows X, X, and X pattern that it just turns me off completely. And I think it's a shame to reject one stereotype in favor of embracing another. I think machismo is a bad thing.
I would tend to agree with you totally. I find it bothersome myself. I think it's one of the unfortunate traits about gay men, that they tend to, especially in New York and San Francisco, that seems to be the key cities where dress type almost seems to become totally indigenous to the whole gay community within New York City, and then it filters out to the rest of the community, and consequently, as soon as it filters out into the rest of the community, it changes among the gay community, and I've seen it now for the past, year and a half in New York, where if you're not wearing construction boots, jeans, and a T-shirt, you're not gay almost. You get that feeling. But now, in my last trip to New York, it seems like everybody was wearing the same fashion, you know, the same fashion, and consequently, I have to assume that it's filtered out in the straight community, and so I would predict that probably by this fall, everybody that's gay in New York will be back into crew necks and chinos and white buck shoes or what have you. This is sort of typical of minorities generally. Once everybody else catches on to it, and I think it's nothing more than that, and it really is sort of a fashion item. I think it's a fashion item that's run its course, and next year's disco records will be featuring white buck shoes and crew necks and what have you.
But let me ask you, Donald, in the sample edition of the Blue Boy for Women,
right?
There's in the rear a kind of clip and save or clip and send back advertisement, and it said it's a woman, and beneath it is the coupon, I think, that you could send back to subscribe. And the quote is, "I like my men strong and rugged, but sometimes I like their affection too." And I just found it interesting to see that kind of strong and rugged in that context, and it seemed to me to be kind of descriptive of that whole macho sensibility.
I don't think it was meant to be descriptive of the macho sensibility, or we would have used the word macho. I think it's
the word rugged kind of doubles for that in a way, in a more mild way, wouldn't you say?
No, not from my point of view. We specifically didn't use the word macho because I feel the same way about it. The basic fact is that most of the models we use tend to be well-built guys, and that's a convenient term for a promotional vehicle to use. But we specifically didn't use the word macho just for that purpose, because we wanted to get involved with the sensibilities, and especially the sexual sensibilities of our models, to suggest that they weren't part of what typically you're going to find as a fantasy object.
I think if a history were done of fashions and fads in the gay community, you would find a whole series of sort of cycles along with what Donald was talking about. That probably arises from the fact that the gay community, or the gay people as a minority, do not have an ethnic heritage the way someone, say, from Europe, any one of the European countries or from Africa or what have you have. They don't get any sort of concept of an historical perspective, the way an Italian might, from their parents. And since there isn't this understanding of what has come before, there's a tendency to try to look out and create an image. So whether it be the effeminate stereotype, or a few years ago it was the layered look, which was suddenly in with gay people at first. An awful lot of male fashion starts in the gay community, my own feeling. And then spreads to the rest of the country. And I think right now, possibly this tendency towards this macho image, however you wish to define it, is somewhat of a reaction of the political situation. Blacks went through a period where they felt they had to be even stronger and more rugged than whites. Suddenly they were starting to get rights. They wanted more rights. So they became, in some cases, even more offensive than the original white oppressors. And I think this is the situation that has created any sort of atmosphere towards macho, as you call it.
How do each of you in your publications use the cover to kind of telegraph to people what you are and what you're about inside the cover? Because that's mostly, for passerbys, how you sell a publication or how you interest the people or catch their eye.
Well, we at Blue Boy, we probably pay as much attention to the cover as any single item in the magazine, specifically because, as you suggest, this is what catches the newsstand buyer. And we typically do that, one, obviously, with the models we select for the cover, but also with the cover lines that we use that try to specifically deal with, in a very short, concise form, what the editorial material on the inside of the magazine is about. I try to, on a continuing basis, make sure that at least one of the cover lines makes it very clear that we're dealing with a gay lifestyle. The other cover lines try to highlight particular articles that we feel are going to have the greatest commonality of interest to the most people.
Jack, working for the Gay News, a newspaper, do you try to telegraph to people on the cover through photographs or through headlines or both what you're about?
Well, both, of course. Being a commercial publication, one thing that you have to understand is that there is the reality that in order for people to read what's inside, they have to buy the publication in the first place, and we're conscious of that. Since most of our readers are men...
Well, I guess called gay,
yeah,
it's kind of obvious what you are. You don't need to say much more.
But
there's certain sensibilities within that that you'd want.
Yeah, it's not really that simple, though, because you have to understand that a lot of people who will buy a gay publication that is maybe not conspicuous, that is sold on boxes on the street, might be people who are closeted, who live in suburbs and who aren't really open about their gayness. And there has to be something to appeal to them that isn't necessarily on a political level. So we try to make the cover as generally appealing as possible, and we end up predominantly putting men on the cover. We have features about... A month ago, we had a feature about VD, a long feature about VD, and the cover was a VD poster that had been used in Canada of two men embracing each other, and it said, "Don't give him anything but love," because we knew that would appeal to men. We also have whatever the important features are in the paper on the cover, and we try to put women on the cover from, you know, now and then, just as a gesture, and the sales invariably always go down, which is really a shame. But I think that getting the news to people is important, and that's the way we do it. We use the cover.
George.
Well, I think we go for something which is recognizable on the cover that people will be able to relate to, whether it be the photo or the lines on the cover, names or particular faces. We have an interview with Maggie Kuhn, for example, and when that runs, that's a good likelihood that she would go on the cover. People know who she is, and they're going to recognize the face and recognize the name. So that's more what we're looking for than just something attractive. There is a very specific relevance between what is on the cover and what is inside the magazine.
I'd like to discuss a bit the question of advertising. Who is willing and who is not willing to advertise within an explicitly gay publication? And what kinds of advertising you're willing or not willing to take? For instance, in Blue Boy, and I don't mean this to be descriptive of what your general philosophy is, but there was an ad in it saying, "Do you measure up?" And it was a gentleman with a large ruler between his legs kind of convincing you that size, genital size, is important and don't let you tell you otherwise. To me, that was a kind of disturbing ad, you know, the kind of ad that helps create insecurities that can never be fulfilled by any product. And I'm wondering, as I'm saying, I don't mean that to be descriptive of in any way of your philosophy, but you make a decision to take or to not take an ad like that. And Donald Embender, how do you go about deciding?
Well, the bottom line decision on whether we take an ad or not, and that happens to be a mail order ad for, I forget the name of the company right now, but our basic decision is obviously, can they pay their bills? And secondly, do we think that the ad would be offensive in any way to our readers or to the magazine wholesalers or what have you? So we have a number of things to consider there. But more and more of our advertising is with national advertisers and what we feel are quality advertisers. You know, I'd love to have a magazine full of Ford Motor Company and Seagram's Liquors. And
you're working on that, aren't you?
Yes, we're working very hard on it. But for a long time, the magazine was structured to be, hopefully, to be successful financially. That is, we could keep going if we never had a page of advertising. The current issue of the magazine carries more advertising pages than any other men's sophisticated title. Men's sophisticated title translates girly magazine in most instances. Any other men's sophisticated title with the exception of Playboy and Penthouse. We've gotten, and a very important aspect of our own mail order business is, our own business is mail order, and we've gotten to the point now where one of the basic problems we're dealing with is that we don't have enough space left in the book to put our own mail order advertising in. So consequently, this coming November, we're going up to with a significant increase in our advertising rates. But we're getting more and more national advertising and more stronger advertising. We still carry a good deal of sexually oriented mail order advertising, but that has been the backbone of gay publications since day one. And it's hard to throw out an advertiser who supported you in the days when you weren't in as good a shape as you are now. Obviously it also works, mail order advertising, or they wouldn't be running, they wouldn't be paying the tab.
Jack, what's your experience with advertising and the willingness or unwillingness of Philadelphia businesses and marketers to buy advertising in a gay periodical?
Well, a lot of our advertising is from straight businesses, businesses in Center City, hairstyling businesses, restaurants. We're trying for national ads with record companies and things where the advertiser would believe that they have some reason to want to reach gay people. We recently got a contract with Electric Factory Concerts, for example. There is very little relationship, actually, between advertising and editorial content, except in the fact that I think the editorial content induces advertisers to want to advertise, but I have absolutely nothing to do with advertising. That's a strict rule that we don't let our advertisers dictate what we can print or what we don't print, and we just make it two completely different areas. So I really have very little to do with it. I do know that the policy is that we won't take advertising that would be derogatory to gay people, in a sense that if we got a help wanted ad or something in the classified section that said, you know, gays need not apply or something like that, we wouldn't take it. And we also wouldn't take advertising that was derogatory to women, even display advertising. Those are our basic two standards.
George, as the business manager of New Gay Life, I'm sure you're very directly involved with the advertising end.
Primarily in trying to collect.
Thank you.
Well, small publications do have that problem. I suppose the major problem we face in getting advertising is that quite a few businesses do not necessarily want to be associated with a gay publication, including several gay businesses in Philadelphia. They tend to want to avoid the automatic, what they presume to be, tie. And it is difficult to get them to realize, well, they're reaching a Center City crowd. They're reaching gay people who have a great deal of spendable income. In survey we did with our readership last year, we found, surprisingly enough, that the average income was $23,000. Where those people are when we need them, I don't know. As to our policies, we have the same basic policies that any publication would have as far as false or misleading advertising. We do not accept certain drug advertising. We were requested to take advertising for some amyl nitrate products, which we turned down because we don't feel that there is sufficient medical data to say that there is no problem with these products. We will not take any advertising which is blatantly sexist, racist, or any other ist.
What is sexist? We know what sexist is, or we know what each of us think sexist is. Within a heterosexual context, is there a possibility for sexism within a homosexual context when it's sexism but directed at the same sex?
Of course, there's a possibility, but what sexism is really depends to a much greater degree on who you're talking to. It becomes much more a complicated semantical issue when you're talking with gay people about it. There are people that would say that anything that tries to incorporate sex in an effort to sell a product is sexist, and I don't necessarily think that's true. It's for myself, I mainly think of sexism. For example, we make an effort to change language. We would never use man to mean person. We avoid words like spokesman or like layman. So there's a conscious effort in my department to avoid that. But I'm not the dictionary definition of sexism. There are women who are very radical feminists whose definition would be very different from mine. And I don't necessarily think that just because something is sexual and that it presents a person in a sexual light, that that's sexist. I think that the presentation of material that appeals to people sexually really has to be defended right now. For example, the pornography law in Pennsylvania, which is really ridiculous. I think it's really a political issue that people should be able to get sexually oriented materials, and that if people want that, if there's a demand for it, it should be there, no matter how small the minority that needs it is. I don't think the majority should rule how the minority can live.
I think what we use as a measurement for sexism is the response of our own staff. If the women or the men on the staff find something particularly offensive and are able to defend that, I mean, not just say, I don't like this because they don't like it, but are able to give legitimate reasons, then following discussion, you know, if we generally are able to agree that this material is sexist, then it wouldn't go in the magazine, whether it's in the form of an article or in advertising.
Donald, do you have any thoughts on this? About it? You know, no, is there...
No. I think our basic point of view at the magazine is that sex is good for you. We really have, you know, I'm not even quite sure what what would involve sexism in the
okay,
gay community.
Okay, take advertising, I've never thought for instance. About it. Sex is very enjoyable, but if someone's body is used to sell an automobile, it's kind of using sex for someone else's profit, and depending on how you see it, at someone else's expense. Women have become very used to, and many women have become very angry about the use of females' bodies to sell cars and various other products. If within gay publication, males, within gay male publications, if males and males' good, you know, handsome, exciting bodies are used to sell products, is that sexist? Or is that a different story? Because it seems to me with more and more gays becoming aware of their own sexuality and talking about it, and with more and more gay publications, a lot of the questions that women have had to deal with, men are going to have to start dealing with now, too.
I don't see why. Because I basically miss your premise. I don't understand what's wrong with using, sexuality just as many other perhaps positive connotations. Reflecting on a product is a method of a valid marketing method that's been effective, and if it wasn't effective, wouldn't be used. I'm not sure I see it related to any political battle whatsoever.
Well, yeah. I think the if it were a situation where you were advertising a feminine hygiene product, don't want to mention any particular names, where you were using some very attractive hunky type guy, I think I would categorize that as sexist. But if you're using the same male model to sell neckties or pants or shirts or something like that, then there's no particular problem with that because you are appealing to a particular audience. I think when they are products which appeal to either gender, then it becomes really a matter of taste and one's own personal politics whether something is or is not sexist.
Jack, any comments?
Well, I think that when you're talking about using men and using the sex appeal of men, you're talking about something completely different in this society from using the sex appeal of women. I did a long interview once with a man who publishes several different sort of neo-pornographic magazines in New York, QQ and a couple other magazines, and he was talking about his experience with models, male models, and he's been a model himself. And he said that, I asked him a question about Playgirl, and he said that nobody takes off their clothes if they're straight. He said, he made the sweeping statement that literally there are no male models who are heterosexual. And that very well may be true because there's such a prohibition against male nudity. And men being sex objects, as soon as a man presents himself and he's in a position of becoming, he's passive. He's there so you can fantasize about him. He's there so he can become whatever you want him to be. That's a complete reversal of the male role. Even if he looks like a construction worker, even if he's standing there with his hands on his hips, he's still there to be used for your fantasy. And so that creates a whole different way of looking at it. It's very hard to say whether that's sexist or not. I think on some level it probably is, but it also breaks down a lot of stereotypes, and it, in a way, it's a positive political thing, really.
I would tend to agree with that, that if anything, it's positive, and I think that's probably, you know, it's probably true that when somebody is into, a male is into nude modeling, that he no longer is looked upon necessarily as the aggressor in a sexual situation. I think that's good in terms of heterosexual relationships beside homosexual relationships, and I think, if anything, it... the more male nudity that's presented, the more likely there is to be a breakdown of the highly structured male-female relationship. And I think that's, if anything, good. So,
I brought up this question in the context of women for so long being used to sell products. I guess one of the main differences between using men and using women for that is that for women it was, in a way, like their only... their only reason for being in a lot of media things was to sell products, their sexuality, and not their talents or their intelligence.
I have a feeling
is what was harnessed by people.
Well, I have a feeling that when a man allows himself to be used as a physical object to sell a product, he's much more aware of the implications of that personally than a lot of women who've allowed themselves to do that are, because it's socially acceptable for women to allow themselves to be defined that way, which I think is a shame. But when a man does it, he's really facing all kinds of societal condemnation, and he must be aware of what he's getting into. I really don't think too many naive people or too many people who are really being used and being made into something are involved in that. I think that people know what they're getting into. You know, for whatever their reasons are, I think they're much more conscious of what's going on in those cases.
Blue Boy now has a circulation of, I believe, 165,000.
That's about right.
That's a very significant number. It's a very large number. Do you think that numbers like that and the increasing sales of many gay publications carries with it a certain amount of political clout as well? I mean, will people... Do you think that that will influence the willingness, for instance, of... people involved in business to vote yes for gay rights instead of voting no because gays are a potential market for them too?
Well, this is a very important aspect of my philosophy and what's happening with the magazine, and that's we've worked very hard to get national advertising in the book and point out, I think every time we point out that the gay community, beside being a community, is an enormously affluent market, probably the largest untapped market in the country today, with enormous discretionary buying power. And I think as the American economic institutions perceive the gay community as a market with enormous purchasing power, I think this will be a distinctly positive addition to our whole civil rights battle. Now, this may be an unfortunate statement about American society, but it's pragmatically, it's I think a valid statement, and consequently, as they see us as having enormous pent up purchasing power, and they will tend to cajole us as a market and try to influence to purchase their particular products. We of course have a lot more leverage in terms of dealing with them and their monies to aid our particular goals.
I know for a fact that we've had a great impact on politics in Philadelphia. When Ed Rendell was recently elected DA, he told the dailies that he thought our endorsement was probably the single most important endorsement in his campaign. And several politicians have been courting our endorsement since we began making a big point of endorsing candidates. And I really think that gay publications everywhere are beginning to have more and more of an impact. I also think that when you start seeing the big airline ads in gay publications and you start seeing the big liquor ads in gay publications, big business, ultimately, being the advertisers in all media, really control how the media presents things. And when they realize how many of us there are enough of us that we can vote politicians in and out of office. When people start really having a sense that we're there, we are people who are their neighbors, even though they may not know it. We are people who run shops they go to. We are members of their own families. When we become a visible presence, that will really alter the way society is and the way people feel when something like a referendum comes up. But I think that's pretty far off. I also think another way that the media, gay media, helps change situations is that if somebody picks up a publication who doesn't know anything about gay people and they see that it's a publication much like other publications and that it definitely appeals to an audience and tries to go about reaching that audience in a professional way, when they read the gay news and they see that it reads as well as the Inquirer does, that the writing is as technically good and provides as much information and is as interesting as AP writing, the feature writing is just as good as anything else. That makes a difference. People realize there has to be somebody putting this together and there has to be somebody reading this. And obviously these people don't just exist in the context of their bedrooms. You know, I think it's really changing things. It's really having an impact.
I think the primary impact is on the gay community itself. There are presently in the vicinity of 400 gay publications in the country, not counting newsletters or in-house type publications. And this whole volume of material which gay people are now being able to read, that's by themselves, for themselves, has made a tremendous impact on the gay community and its politics. We have developed well beyond the stage where you would find in any given city one gay organization, to the point where there are hundreds, if not thousands, all across the country. And one of the keys to keeping these organizations functioning and keeping people informed has been the gay press. And I think that whatever reflection that will have on the straight community may not be from the gay press directly, but from the gay community as they get their information from the gay press.
Okay, I want to thank all of you for participating in this conversation this afternoon. I've been speaking with three people in the studio. My guests have been Donald Embender, who's the publisher of Blue Boy, a national publication, George Bodimer, the business manager of New Gay Life, a Philadelphia-based magazine publication, and Jack Veazey, who's the managing editor of the Philadelphia Gay News, which is a gay newspaper paper published every 2 weeks. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.